This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, April 6th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Packed with Pitching, Tuscola. Far down the pecking order of hitters due up in the inning, Tuscola's Maddie Meinhold crossed the gravel road into the grass behind the home dugout at Irvin Park and starts to throw a teammate willing to catch. Kerry Allen does the same thing the next inning. It's no bullpen at the varsity softball level, but it's a staging area Tuscola's three pitchers can call their own. One of the three is almost always warming up there just in case when it's the Warriors' turn to bat. No relief was needed March 29th against Sullivan. Starting pitcher Morgan Day was cruising, and only three times this season have the Warriors, 13-1, used a reliever. And even those situations were to help Allen get reps on her way back from lingering injuries. 2 years ago, Aaron Walker's senior season, Tuscola hardly ever thought about using a second pitcher. The starters have always needed help this season. The Warriors are outsourcing teams almost 14-2 on average. But the point is, it's there if they do. I'm very lucky to have them by my side, Day said. If I get in trouble, or they get in trouble, they'll always know I have their backs, and they'll have mine, so it's a great feeling. The insurance has come in handy this season in that Tuscola has two good pitchers to turn to, while Allen, the Warriors' leader in wins and innings pitched last season, was limited by injuries. She hasn't made her first start yet, pitching 6 innings in 3 appearances. All three players became full-time varsity starting pitchers for the first time last season, entering with varying levels of experience and setting up Tuscola for 2 years with a 3-player pitching staff. Allen was the surefire first option to replace Walker. In 2014, Walker pitched 152 innings, accumulating a 22-4 record, 202 strikeouts, and a .96 ERA. Allen and Meinhold pitched 37 innings combined all season. Last season, Allen pitched 22-4 with a 2.29 ERA in 88 1/3 innings. Meinhold, 9-0, .72 ERA, 48 IP in 2015, and Day, 7-3, 1.68 ERA, 87 1/3 IP, were the surprises who made the pitching staff even more substantial. Maddie pitched for me a couple of summers and at times struggled throwing strikes, Tuscola coach Lenny Cementi said. We got her in as a sophomore once or twice, and she got her feet wet. When Morgan Day was a freshman, she was just a good freshman. Nothing special. She's worked so hard in the weight room and everywhere else. She's made herself. That's where the three-headed monster came, from her hard work. Carly's always been there. The other two have worked hard to get there, and Carly's worked hard to stay there. Day, the newcomer last season as a sophomore, started with a blank slate in the circle and became a major factor, finishing with 108 strikeouts and allowing 28 fewer hits than Allen in only one fewer inning. Day's ascension, and all three of the pitchers have a full season, a full year of experience, meant more good things were coming this year. We knew we were going to be pretty good this year, Meinhold said. Morgan had a great season last year pitching, so having her back this year was good. With Allen slowed at the start, Day has turned into the number one starter. She's 8-0 with a 1.30 ERA in 43 innings and has recorded 56 strikeouts. Meinhold is 5-1 with a 1.40 ERA and 41 strikeouts in 25 innings. And if her second of three appearances is any indication, it looks like Allen is about ready to be unleashed. On Friday, she struck out 5 of the 6 Blue Ridge batters she faced. None of the three have backed down, which makes Cementi's job a lot more complicated. We'd be a great pitching staff if it was baseball, but we don't have enough balls to go around with three pitchers like this, Cementi said. It's tough to give them all innings. But it's a nice problem to have. Too many good pitchers for one ball. Cementi could throw a rested top and starter out on the field almost every two innings in a game if he felt like it. It definitely helps, especially if your arm gets tired or you're sore, Meinhold said. You can just count on one of us three to get the job done. They have different approaches, too, keeping opponents off balance. Meinhold said Allen uses a lot of movement, while she and Day have more speed. But Meinhold and Day have different strikeout pitches. Day's a drop ball, Meinhold's a changeup. If Carey pitches, then we can bring in me and Morgan and throw it right past them, Meinhold said. If Morgan and I pitch, and then Carey can come in and do her movement stuff, that we will really trick the batters. So far, they've thrown everything with tons of success, and their confidence is skyrocketing. A scary prospect for the opposition. It's definitely very deadly with all the competition we face whenever we have three pitchers that are perfectly capable of strikeouts and throwing extremely hard, Day said. You don't find it very often with really good teams that have just two, but three extremely talented pitchers. The intimidation factor is large. The next article is entitled, Thinking Inside the Box, Decatur. Braden Edwards credits a homework assignment for setting his feet on the career path he's pursuing. I had homework I needed to do on a computer, but I didn't have a computer, said Edwards, a MacArthur High School senior who is an intern in the Information Technology Department of the Decatur School District. His grandmother brought him a computer, and Edwards, as he had done with toys as a child, tried taking it apart and putting it back together again. That was fine as long as he only took off one piece at a time and put it right back, but the day came when he removed too much at a time and couldn't reassemble it. Grandma wasn't very pleased. We had to take it to Best Buy, Edwards admitted with a chuckle. Grandma made me promise to wait until I was older for further experimentation. As a result, however, Edwards has spent a lot of time learning about computers, and he plans to join the Navy after graduation. He scored well enough on his aptitude test for the military to be offered the job he wants in information technology. After his Navy hitch, if he doesn't finish his college requirements in the service, he will go to college. I'm more interested in the computer engineering side, Edward said. I don't care too much for coding. I care more about setting up the computer, making parts for the computer, putting them together, and seeing how they work. Helping older relatives with their computers and breaking the news when they must be replaced acquainted him with older methods of the machines with floppy disk drives. He takes the old broken ones home to tinker with them. His supervisor in the IT department, Kyle Roberts, said that Edward's aptitude is so good that they only have to show him something once, and he takes it from there. He helped with the iPad rollout earlier this school year, and is working with Roberts on the Extron electronics panels at MacArthur High School. The project eventually will allow the IT department to perform tasks from the office instead of having to go out to the building. We're just throwing everything we can at him, Robert said, and every time he's done what we needed. The next article is entitled, Conspiracy Trial for Murder of 19-Year-Old Paige Mars Begins in U.S. Court. Urbana. Exactly 1 year after 19-year-old Paige Mars was shot to death in a wooded area on Decatur's northwest side, the trial of Kelton Snyder began Tuesday in federal court. Snyder, 23, is charged with planning the murder and his armed robbery partner. U.S. District Judge Colin S. Bruce told the 7 women and 5 men of the jury that the indictment against Snyder accuses him of conspiring to kill Mars to prevent her from communicating with law enforcement officers about the robbery of the Circle K convenience store in Decatur. If convicted, Snyder will receive a sentence of life in prison. He is being held in federal custody without bond. Snyder originally was charged in Macon County Circuit Court with first-degree murder and armed robbery for the crime in which he wielded a shotgun early the morning of April 3rd and the murder committed 2 days later. Snyder's case was transferred to federal court. As a general rule, transfer decisions are made when prosecutors believe they have a better chance of obtaining convictions or longer sentences in the federal system. In his opening statement, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jason Baum said Mars was shot twice in the head and 3 times in the chest with a sawed-off shotgun. After the defendant robbed the gas station with his friend, Matthew Higgs Voigt, during which they wore masks and latex gloves, they later worried Mars would identify them, Baum said. You'll see the defendant carrying the same shotgun Paige Mars was murdered with, Baum told the jurors, referring to the surveillance video shot at Circle K, 1685 Baltimore Avenue. Paige was a getaway driver in the robbery. She was paid $200. On Easter Sunday, Snyder visited a former girlfriend at her home. He was picked up from there by a male friend. He told the man he robbed the Circle K and he was worried about the getaway driver. Snyder told his friend, I have to smoke her, Baum told the jurors. Baum said there would be testimony that Snyder was dropped off at Higgins Voigt's residence about 8 p.m. Sunday night. Snyder returned to his grandmother's nearby Eastside residence about an hour later, where he spent the night. Higgins-Voigt contacted Mars at 9:46 and 10:31 p.m. as she completed her shift at a Dollar General store. At 10:57 p.m., when a Macon County Sheriff's deputy heard gunshots in the area where the shooting occurred. After a sanitary district worker found Mars's body the following morning near the Sangamon River, south of the 1100 block of Lincoln Park Drive, her car was located in a nearby parking lot. A friend called Snyder later that day. Snyder told him his loose end had been taken care of, Baum said. Police found a box of 12-gauge shotgun shells and boxes of 16-gauge shotgun shells at the residence where Snyder had been staying. Assistant U.S. Public Defender Elizabeth Pollock told the jurors that Snyder has admitted his involvement in the robbery, but he won't admit participating in the murder because he wasn't involved. Pollock said Snyder was asleep at his grandmother's house when Higgins-Voigt killed Mars. You won't see government evidence that he conspired to kill her, she said. The one witness who said that Snyder told him he wanted to kill the getaway driver has an ulterior motive, Pollock said. He wanted Snyder to go to prison because Snyder has been flirting with his wife. Baum said there were text messages between Snyder and Mars found on her phone, which had been deleted from his. Messages between them show that Mars, who had just started spending time with Snyder a day or so before the robbery, heard that Snyder beat up prior girlfriends. To show the jurors the contents of this text exchange, Baum read about the text from Snyder near the podium, from the podium near the jury box, while Assistant U.S. Attorney Catherine Boyle read the text from Paige Mars as she sat in the witness box. The first exchange took place about 2.5 hours after the robbery. I think I proved my point that I'm for real ride or die, Paige wrote. If you wish to come over, I want to kiss you, real ride or die, Snyder replied. I never met a ride or die like you. I'm speechless. I'm one of a kind, baby, Paige texted. During exchanges Sunday night, the messages had a much darker tone. Paige wrote that she had heard he hit his girlfriends. Who told you? Snyder replied. Everyone, basically. Is it true? Paige asked. I hit dumb expletives, not women, Snyder said. Let me find my place here. There it is. Snyder repeatedly asked for names of those who were telling her bad things about him. She refused to give him names and said it would get ugly if he went after her family or people she loved. You don't know ugly, Snyder said. She said the people saying bad things about him were people she cared about. They don't want to see me get locked up, she said. Everyone is saying that you're no good and I need to stay away before something bad happens. On March 7th, Snyder pleaded guilty to armed robbery in federal court. He will be sentenced to up to 20 years in prison for that conviction at a hearing August 22nd. Higgins-Voigt, who has pleaded not guilty to all charges, is being held without bond in the Macon County Jail, pending his trials for first-degree murder and armed robbery. The next article is entitled, Menard Tweaks School Aid Formula Change. Springfield. Senator Andy Menard once again is introducing legislation to overhaul the way Illinois funds public schools. The Bunker Hill Democrat said the latest version, which he plans to file today, addresses criticisms of previous versions and accounts for statements Republican Governor Bruce Rauner has made about education funding. Most notably, the bill would guarantee that no school district receives less state funding next school year than it did this year. This hold harmless provision, a major sticking point for wealthier districts in the Chicago suburbs and elsewhere, would be phased out over 4 years. Menard's proposal aims to channel more funding to districts that need it most, including those with large numbers of low-income students, students with disabilities, and students learning English. It is intended to erase and correct what is undoubtedly the worst and most regressive system of public funding education in the country, Menard said during a State House news conference. Under the current system, which relies heavily on local property taxes, some districts are able to spend as much as $30,000 per student, while others struggle to spend $6,000, he said. The bill would bring Chicago public schools into the same funding system as every other district and would have the state cover the employer portion of Chicago teachers' pensions, something it currently does for the rest of the state. Guaranteeing level funding for next year would cost about $400 million, and picking up the tab for Chicago's teachers' pensions would cost roughly $200 million annually, he said. That's on top of the approximately $13 billion the state already spends on elementary and secondary education. The existing formula, created in 1997, establishes a foundation level that districts should spend per student, currently $6,119, and directs general state aid to help them achieve it. However, for the past several years, the Democrat-controlled General Assembly hasn't appropriated enough money to fund the full amount. Menard's new formula would set funding levels on a district-by-district basis based on demographics and other factors rather than using one statewide figure. Menard and other Democrats, including Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat, Chicago, have said the state should fix the formula before putting any more money into the current system. That position has led Rauner and other Republicans to accuse Democrats of holding up school funding to secure a bailout for Chicago public schools. Rauner has called on lawmakers to fully fund education for next year under the current formula before trying to overhaul the system. What we can't do is have a system where we pit school districts against each other, Rauner said Tuesday before Menard's news conference. We've got to come up with a way to increase significantly state support for education and focus that money on the lower income districts and the more rural districts that don't have the resources that they deserve. The next article is entitled, City Court Filing, Use of Police Car Not Relevant in Sweeney Case. Decatur. The City of Decatur and its city manager, Tim Gleason, now claim the former police chief Gleason cannot fired. Let me start that sentence over. The City of Decatur and its city manager, Tim Gleason, now claim the former police chief Gleason fired cannot rewrite history in an attempt to get his job back. Gleason said the city asserts that ex-chief Brad Sweeney's allegations he was fired in retaliation, among other reasons, for objecting to Gleason's use of a squad car and police driver for a private trip are invalid. The city and manager's attorneys, Featherston, Gomer, Postwaite, Stocks, Flynn, and Hubbard, claim in a court filing Tuesday that Sweeney's lawsuit and his request for reinstatement and damages should be dismissed under a legal doctrine called judicial estoppel. This basically states that someone cannot obtain an unfair advantage legally by taking one position on the facts today when previously they had taken a contradictory one. The attorneys write that department rules and law required Sweeney to act by registering and reporting his concerns if he objected to Gleason's car ride. Gleason was taken to the airport in St. Louis on May 7th after an appearance at a Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce State of the City breakfast event so he could catch a flight on time to start his vacation. The city and Gleason, who in any case maintain the car ride wasn't a breach of city rules and allege Sweeney approved it, say the ex-chief didn't take action at the time and cannot take action now. A person having a right, here a duty, to act that stands silent, offering no action, cannot later be heard to complain. The attorney's right. Allowing this action to stand allows Sweeney to seek profit from his inconsistent actions. The latest court filing also includes an affidavit from Jim Jetz, now the acting police chief, who had been the driver who took Gleason to the airport. I did not consider the act as a violation of law or a violation of a policy or procedure of the Decatur Police Department, Getz says. Chief of Police Sweeney approved and ordered me to transport City Manager Gleason. I had no cause to question then Chief Sweeney. But Sweeney, in his previous court papers, said he did complain to Gleason and voiced his strong concerns about the ride at a confrontation in the manager's office about a week later. Sweeney then again advised Gleason that his use of a police car and a driver for personal purposes was improper and insisted it could never happen again, Sweeney's complaint says. Sweeney, a 20-year department veteran who was named police chief in January 2015, said the confrontation soured his relationship with Gleason, and things worsened when Sweeney refused to support a fuel tax pushed by the city manager. The ex-chief said his objections to the tax were another reason he was fired on February 4th. Gleason and the city, who maintains employees such as Sweeney can be fired and hired at will for no reason, say he was terminated for a variety of issues that include poor job performance and not being truthful in his dealings with the city manager. That's the end of part one. I'll be right back with part two.